Hi, I'm Steve.
And I'm Simon. Welcome to the Business and Beers podcast,
where we chat to our guests about real life experiences and the practical steps to their success, with a ton of knowledge bombs getting dropped along the way.
While enjoying a beer together, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Hey, Business and Beers podcast listeners, Simon and I are excited for today's guest. We've been trying to organize this podcast for a while, but due to logistics, people moving, people going on holiday, we haven't had the chance. But we're quite excited that we're getting to share a beer with Frugal Local today. So Frugal, tell our guests who is Frugal, and then obviously our favorite question, the curveball. What's one thing that not many people know about Frugal?
The secret sauce.
Hi, everybody. It's Frugal here. As always, no, I've swapped the coffee for beer today. So only for once. But I'm Frugal Local. That's what I seem to be known on online. I'm a content creator. I don't like the word influencer, but I've got a couple of followers and a couple of people, that I teach about property, money, small businesses. And just my journey that I have been walking through for the last couple of years. So the thing that people don't know about me, I love cooking with exotic ingredients. So not a lot of people actually know that. So for example, I have spices that are fairly rare. I've got a special cupboard for my spices. And we love experimenting, creating things like Chinese dumplings, Turkish manti, and like Chinese food, but not the stuff that you get in your local Chinese takeaway restaurant.
So where do you source these ingredients?
Some of them we've traveled, we've sourced them from overseas. Some of them we have special places here. So because I speak Chinese, yep. I actually go to Chinatown and I know what to order and what to ask for. And because I can read it, I can get along.
Two bombs dropped there.
Yeah. Cool. Let's get down to the crux of the episode. I'm one of Frugal's very few followers. And Frugal in the past couple of weeks has been quite open and honest about toxic work environment. So Simon and I thought that would be a great topic to discuss today, especially because when I was doing research before this episode, a lot of people are saying to their boss, I quit. And it's actually because of the COVID and the pandemic that's hit. And I think the reason being is that people have just realized that there's more to life, right, than a crappy boss or something like that. So that's kind of where my viewpoint on it comes. But Frugal, let's get stuck into your experience of toxic work environments.
Okay, so I want to just, before I start, I just want to give a couple of caveats and just a little bit of context here. So a lot of people tell you, listen, I've got a toxic work environment, but many of them don't. It really depends on a lot of factors. So the first factor would be what happens by times is that you're just not the fit for the company. And it happens by times. Let's think about it, right? Sometimes everybody, there's introverts and you're an extrovert. So you talk a lot, they don't. I mean, it's a very stupid example, but it could also be a thing of the technology that they use, the mechanisms, the systems that they use, the fact that everybody starts working at 7 o'clock at night and finishes at 2 in the morning, the fact that everybody, really enjoy working on their holidays. So it really depends on that. So sometimes it is a thing that you're just not a fit for it. That is definitely it. And then when you're not a fit for it, then it looks like, okay, my goodness, this is toxic. Mm. So another case might be that it is actually toxic. In that case, there might be narcissists, Machiavellianists, or psychopaths that you actually work with. I mean, just to give you an idea, you are 3 times more likely to have a psychopath in a C-level job, so that's the execs and the directors' posts, than you would actually in any other role or in any other place in the world. So so just with that in context, you need to realize that sometimes it is not the job. Sometimes it's you.
I actually want to, just before we jump onto that, because you've used big words there.
Oh my, yes. And we're going to get into those.
Audience from Oxford. Not understand, yeah. Not me. I'm from Benoni, so it's just next to that. But maybe you can clarify before you go into like toxic, how do you define what is narcissist, all of these like big fancy words that you use before you start jumping into toxic culture? Because someone might sit there and say, yeah, my boss is narcissist because someone said he's a narcissist. But what does that actually mean?
I think I first want to say, just be very careful when you call people things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm using the words very generally here, cool. But be very careful when you know, because for example, if I'm going to say my boss was a psychopath, he wasn't, but if I would say something like that, I mean, I could be sued quite a bit. So I tend to use the word that some of the people had these type of tendencies.
Yes.
So let's do a couple of definitions here. So the first definition is narcissism.
Yeah.
That is... you know, it comes from the ancient Greek, blah, blah. And it talks about self-love. It talks about this person that he believes that everything that he does is right. And even if he sacrifices other people to get, you know, to do that, he's still, you know, helping those people, you know, and he's actually like, he can't do anything wrong.
So he's like almost like a savior. I'm here to save the people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the best way to explain what a, you know, when it comes to a psychopath is somebody who, you know, to give in just a graphic example, if I may, is, let's say a kid gets hit by a bus, right? And the kid is flat, like just, you know, like there's nothing left. It's
like a painting.
Yeah, basically you're going to have scrap...
Like a 3D painting.
Yeah, scrap the kid off, you know, with a little, you know, tweeze or something. And you get the mum, and the mum's like crying, like, this, you know, my child, oh my goodness, you know, I mean... my child's dead, and I mean, obviously, I'm distraught. I think, you know, like, there's absolutely, like, there's no words to describe this. A psychopath would basically look at the situation, look at the mom, and then for 5 minutes, and then go back home and stand in front of the mirror and try to mimic how the mother actually acted.
Wow.
That is what a psychopath would do.
Yeah.
Then the third part, Machiavellianism, or is basically somebody who can manipulate people.
Yeah.
It is somebody who can literally pull strings, manipulate people to get what they want.
Yeah.
Now, these three, I believe they call them the dark triangle. And those three things, I just want to mention as well, many of these things, they are not seen as psychological disorders.
Yeah.
They're seen as personality disorders. Okay. So they're not classified really as you need to go into a, you know, like a special, what do you call it? Like
a home
mental hospital. But basically it just means that you've got something that's not quite 100% normal.
Yeah.
So what I want to mention just here as well, like I said, don't call somebody a psychopath.
Yes.
Don't do that. Never, ever do that. But unfortunately what we find is that in the corporate environment, people will very easily... be able to be a psychopath and fit in quite well. I mean, for the reason, following reasons. Number one, they've got no emotions.
Yep.
So what they can do is that now, if you send out a letter and you say, "Hi, you know, we're looking, or you know, we're looking for CVs. We've got this new job. We want people to be able to make hard decisions."
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Psychopath, no emotions. Tick. You know, have you been able to get what you need in a difficult situation? So an example is employee doesn't want to do the work. So now you need to get him to do the work. So sometimes you have to manipulate people.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh my, tick. Okay. Then you've got somebody who says, listen, I need to basically organize things. And while this person says, well, you know, they specialize in basically organizing and manipulating their way and bullying their way into getting what they need.
Yeah.
So what I find is that, and my experience is that oftentimes, not all corporate environments, not all businesses, not all small businesses, but it happens that all of these things just fit perfectly into what they're looking for. Charismatic, able to convince people, and not necessarily saying that this person is psychopath or, you know, is... mentally unstable or anything like that, but it just fits so nicely, and they can hide, you know, very, very nicely in covering their own tracks and blaming everybody else.
I actually wanted to add there, I'm reading an interesting book by Richard Nye, The Power of Purpose, and funny enough, the chapter last night was around this whole victim mindset, and it ties in so nice to what you're saying now, because I can't remember who actually said the quote, but it was, you get to be the victim once, and after that you become the volunteer. And I think what you're touching on is so like relevant in the workplace today, because a lot of the times you might get treated a certain way, but you're actually not looking at that fit like you were talking about. So I might not necessarily be a good fit in the business. So how do I justify that? Oh, my boss is a narcissist. He's a D-I-C-K, you know, all of these things. But you're actually not looking at what's actually happening in the business. Yes, you do get those situations where someone is, yeah, let's be be very politically correct. The person in the organization is a narcissist. But like you're saying, sometimes there's actually other factors which are in your control. Like you say, let's use the biggest and quickest example. You're not a good fit. But now, because you're not willing to make a move to get a new job or start your own business or whatever the case may be, you now start labeling the people in your team to justify your decision of not making that move, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So I think that's definitely something that does happen. Unfortunately, it is easier to blame other people for our problems.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, right? I mean, it's never my fault. I mean, that's what we learn in corporate.
Yeah.
You should always write politically correct emails,
yeah,
such as I'm concerned, I'm worried,
yeah,
I'm confused.
Yeah.
And all of these words that we use in a corporate environment to play the game. Because if we don't, then we are basically in the firing line.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we get the written warnings and we're out.
Yeah, and don't take accountability. Like you don't take, like, I've actually done that, I've messed up, I'm sorry.
Mm. You know what's interesting? So I want to jump in here for a moment, and I want to start with my story, if I may. Yeah. I'm not going to go into too much detail, because yeah, I'm sure that we'll touch on a couple of the points. Yeah. I mean, because we don't have 5 years to go through it. So what's interesting with regards to many toxic working environments is that, and when it comes to people with psychopathic tendencies, there tends to be three steps. The first step is they win you over. The second step is they manipulate you. And the third one is they dispose of you. So here's what happens, right? When I started at the company, which cost me my mental health to a very big extent, within the first month or two, I made a big blunder. And I did exactly that. I went to my boss and I'm like, I'll take responsibility for this because I blundered. I pushed code into production, which broke. And he told me, he sat back and he told me the following. He's like, do you know what? And in this company, we don't blame people. What we just do is we just jump and we fix things.
Oh, wow. Tweety birds flying all over when you heard that, eh?
Oh, little angels sing, and just spend people.
We fail fast.
Absolutely. I mean, look, and I come from just give a bit of background. I mean, I'm a very lean startup-y person, a bootstrapping person. I mean, frugal, I bootstrapped. Literally, I didn't have a blog. I was telling people I had a blog, and when I first, somebody asked me, what's your blog URL? And suddenly I doubled my followers. I'm like, okay, now I'm going to start the blog.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, how amazing is this, that you walk into an environment and you fail fast. So what you do is you deploy things and, you try and do something, yeah, and you build it, and you build on top of that. So, I mean, that sounds like the perfect environment. And yeah, all of these things, the people, the encouragement, and everybody's working together as a team,
yeah,
and all of that. And then my KPI happened. So I know that there was something, but nobody spoke to me. And
yeah,
more than a year after working at the company, I received a form to say, listen, we just need you to fill in this form. It's for your KPI. Yeah. So I received my KPI document, just for the listeners who don't know, KPI, Key Performance Indicators. It's your performance review. So it's just saying, how have you performed in these areas?
Yeah.
So I received my KPI, and a week later, I had my KPI review.
Wow. So, but maybe just to take a step back, did you know your KPI when you started?
Oh, absolutely not.
So you have the big failure, which is within the first month or whatever. Year down the line, you get a document, hey, it just fill out your KPI. Week later, you have a KPI review.
Absolutely.
And
so
in this period, what harps are playing, the angels are singing, you think, this is the place to be.
So what's really interesting here is that what happened the last 3 months of the 2 months before my KPI is I was busy on a project and I finished my part of it. And the other person that was working with me basically was, he just said, okay, I have to, he reached his deadline and he handed the code over to me. And it was a mess. And I had to rewrite everything.
But fail fast then.
So, but again, and I told them, I'm like, listen, this code is a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to fix all of his code. I have to fix everything that he did. And he's been spending 2 months on it.
Yeah.
So now I have to do all of that work and
catch up.
And eventually it looked like my code was bad, but they didn't say anything. They were just like, yeah, they're a little bit unhappy. I mean, the one person called me in, and it was like the CIO called me in, and he was like, listen, they need to get this thing out. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine, I'll work this weekend. And I'm, and I was working already quite a bit of overtime,
yeah,
to try and make this right. So after receiving my KPI, and then a week later I was called in for my KPI review, I was told that I am poo-poo. So that's a very polite way of saying it.
Yeah.
I would like to use, and my boss actually walked out halfway through my KPI and said he's got another meeting. And then he said, the fact of the matter is we can't trust you.
Wow.
So now, obviously in that situation, I have been won over, which is the first point. I was won over. I was said, do you know what? I really, you know, like, we believe in you. We know that you can do this. And then in my KPI, we were told you are poo-poo to excremental measures.
Wow.
So, and now you can understand, looking at that, because you've been won over, and now they're pulling your strings, and they're like, well, you know, we don't really think that you know, they basically told me, for the level of seniority that you are, you're not performing. You're not actually pushing out the code that you should be.
Yeah.
Mm. I think just to, so I've been fortunate that I haven't been in toxic work environments. I think I've been in toxic work situations, exactly that, when there's deadlines, people, and all of that happens. But my experience of it is that it stems down from the leadership's actions and not the leadership's words. Because exactly like you said, your boss that month in complimented you, well, not complimented, just said it's all okay, it's all going to be fine. But his actions a year later proved to you what the environment was actually like. And I think that's the really important point here, is that don't always trust the words. And particularly when managers start playing each other up against each other, when you have KPIs, he needs to report how was Frugal's KPI to the CIO and all of that, then you see people's real true colors. And I think that's always important, because you can't just, you know, when you had that first month situation, you thought it was all great, right? It was all rosy and all of that. And then only a year later, again, it's actions speak louder than words, right?
Absolutely. So I'd like to just point out here, and then I want to, you know, then we can continue. I highly recommend anybody that's working in an environment which they are uncomfortable with, keep a record of everything.
Yes.
If you suspect that you're working with somebody who's facetious or who doesn't say the same thing in the morning than in the afternoon, keep a journal of what you are doing every day and what they are telling you to do and the day that they do that.
Yeah.
And do not take phone calls, you know, as I need to do that.
Yeah.
Do not do that.
And I think it's important to note, don't take those notes on your work computer or your work emails, because that's the thing. They can take that away from you, because that's the asset, right? So try where you can on keep it on in your notebook or on your laptop.
Absolutely. And I highly recommend also following up. So I used to use these two lines. The company, they used to escalate it to God himself. So basically what used to happen is that certain people that were toxic, and not the boss specifically, he was a pawn. You get three types of people. You get the pawns, and you get the that's the people that the people play, that the person play. Yeah. Then you get the people that's put on the pedestal, so they have to warm up to them so that they can get the work done, and the people that they don't care about. So those are the three. And I think that it's very important that you are acutely aware of where everybody fits in. If you are a pawn, you need to be careful, because you're going to be used, abused, and then you're going to be kicked out. See you. Bye-bye.
And maybe just to add a disclaimer there, because just to be clear, I mean, what we're talking about now is very much in a toxic environment. Do you find those positions in, let's call it, the company that is great, the leadership is amazing, the people are great? Do you still find those type of structures in an organization where you still have your pawns, you still have your pedestals, you still have the people that they actually don't care about? Because I'd like to make like a clear clarification of that, because people might sit and say, yeah, but my company's great, but now I need to check, am I a pawn, am I a pedestal, am I nobody that they need to care about?
So I think this is a very interesting question, specifically for the reason that if you've got somebody that's especially people in a highly charged political environment, so that'll be a big corporate, because of the likelihood of having people with, I don't want to say psychopathic tendencies, I'd say people that are willing to sacrifice any person to reach their goals.
Yeah.
I recommend taking caution.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
I do not say that anybody is necessarily a psychopath.
Yeah.
But I did not take caution.
Yeah.
And I got the full brunt of it.
Yeah. Mm.
So do I think that there are very big healthy companies? Yeah. Absolutely. I know of a couple and they are wonderful. Yeah. They really care about their staff.
Yeah.
But then you get the one that I came from after having my mental breakdown, where I got called into a meeting the day that I returned after a doctor booked me off.
Yeah.
And my boss told me, we do not want you to go to a doctor to book you off if we don't want to give you leave.
Oh, wow. That's really comforting. Eh?
Absolutely. So then I know these were, that person was a pawn.
Yeah.
My boss was a pawn. I know that now, but that's okay. But what I want to say is that even though, remember, all of these people that manipulate, people that destroy people's careers, people that really just go out to destroy people, that bully people, that abuse people, you wouldn't necessarily know until it's too late because they win you over most of the time.
Yeah. Mm.
If you're valuable, they win you over, they manipulate you, and when they kick you out, that's only the time that you know.
Yeah.
So when you say people in a normal working environment, right, just the normal person, and they're like, you know, they wouldn't know until it's too late.
Yeah.
And that is concerning.
Yeah. Well, I actually want to jump in because, I mean, you've kind of touched on, so you've now had your KPR review. They've said, oh, frugal, you worse than cow dung. And now you've given us insight that you've had like a mental breakdown.
So I just want to correct you. It was fly poo poo.
Fly poo poo, okay.
Yes, it wasn't so it wasn't cow dung. That's,
so that's even worse. So.
Cow dung is one level up from that. So.
So what transpired from you getting told that I'm just going to rip the bandaid off that you shit to you having this mental breakdown? Like what was the process that went so quickly down your, like in that time?
So at the time, basically with that KPI, I had a switch of bosses and the new boss just couldn't, you know, the damage was done.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, due to the manipulative behavior of the company and the people, I was put into a position of a support role. So basically, I was the only person in the company doing that whole like department's support. So basically, anything from emails not going through in the IT systems, I had to backtrack and I got screamed at. Yes, there was a couple of times somebody would stand at my desk and scream at me, "You will not throw this back in my court," and I removed some swear words there just to be polite in front of other people. I've reported it. Nothing was done. Things like that happened. I was literally context switching six, eight times a day easily. So literally people would come to stand to my desk and say, "Listen, you need to change stuff now." And I realized it was me. I mean, it had to be me.
Yeah.
It couldn't be anybody else. And then, I mean, even though like the new boss, she was caught up in other projects. So I couldn't always ask her. And again, when I reported it, people played the politics so well that I couldn't actually do that. So since that happened until my breakdown, it was it was about a year.
Wow.
Roughly 8 months or a year or so. Yeah. And I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I literally just could not take it anymore. While I was booked off by the doctor, my boss still contacted me to bring in my laptop so that I can get an upgrade.
Wow.
So basically in that year, I can tell you, I mean, I was freaking out because I'm going to lose my job. And I really liked the people. I liked, you know, the people were actually nice. And again, it's part of the grooming process. I still have quite a few friends from there.
Yeah.
Not the manipulative people. Yeah. They are on my naughty list and I hope they burn in hell. But
no bad vibes.
Absolutely. You know, but I realize as well, I've had coffee with many of them. I've sent emails also to, you know, to tell them, listen, they've done a really, really shit job.
Yeah.
But I think really that, you know, for me, it is a very, very sad experience that I did not protect myself.
Yeah.
I think it's just important to note, so Frugal and I actually have had coffee a few times as well, and I don't think you've highlighted enough now just in the story, Frugal, is that in that year you were grafting. Like you were working 10-hour days, you know, you were going above and beyond. It's not that you were just... I'm not saying now that you're making excuses or whatever the case may be, is it's that you were working, you were trying your best, you were giving your all in this role, you know. So I think that's also just important to note, that you didn't just take this KPI and be like, no, the company's toxic. It's them. I'm blaming them. You went in guns blazing to do a good job.
Absolutely. So just to give you a bit of context there, I mean, I got called on my birthday. So that evening, my wife took me out for dinner.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good restaurant. And I got called there and said, listen, this stuff is broken. I need to fix it. I got called, you know, when I was on my date nights. I got called when I had family gatherings. I got called 15 times on my holiday. Got contacted 15 times to support with stuff. One of the calls included saying, why didn't you take your laptop with you? And I'm like, why would I ever agree to take my laptop with me?
It's like holiday.
Yeah.
It's time off.
Yeah, I got called when I was in Croatia. So, wow. I mean, the fact
should
is...
You just told him data is expensive, sorry.
The number you've dialed is unavailable at present. Please try again later. So, I mean, the thing is that, you know, a lot of people say, yes, it's the other people's fault. And I did not. I took, in the wise words of a good book I'm reading at the moment called Extreme Ownership.
Yes.
I basically took extreme ownership and I said, it's my fault.
Is that Chocker Wilkinson? Yes. Or
yeah.
Indeed.
He's got the deep voice, man.
Yeah. So, but I have to say, it was a very big shocker. You know, like I took everything that I possibly could do. I mean, literally, like me and my wife cooking. And as you guys know, like, you know, we really take our cooking seriously. And I would have to open my laptop and work. I mean, if it was during whatever the case might be, I would be contacted.
Yeah.
And eventually I put my phone on silent permanently because I just couldn't take it anymore. Mm. And yes, I was working a fair amount of hours,
yeah.
a fairly good amount of hours, and I was permanently on standby.
Yeah.
So whether it's holiday, whether it's whatever the case might be, if I'm with family, whatever the case might be, I was on permanent standby.
But I think to jump into that, because I think a lot of people would find themselves in that situation where, and correct me if I'm wrong in this journey, so now you're in this dev role, senior position, you've got a lot of responsibility. You get built up, you get crushed down, and now you're in a support role. And generally support is like quite a crappy role. Like you're actually just doing the job that no one else wants to do. You're doing the menial tasks that actually add zero value to your life. So now you've gone from adding value to adding zero value, but still giving your heart and soul in the mindset. Because the way that I'm thinking about that is people that take ownership, like you say, you're reading this ownership thing, you think to yourself, okay, great. I'm going to commit to this job. I'm going to give 150%. If they call me on holiday, if they call me on weekends, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a gradual process. It's not that one weekend they phone you 55 times. It becomes once on a Saturday, you answer. Once on a Sunday, you answer. And this process, and you're thinking in your mind, okay, great. Maybe if I climb this little Mount Everest, every step I take, maybe they're going to see the good work that I do. And I think as people that work in organizations, you want someone to be like, Frugal, I'm proud of you. Good job. So you're climbing this mountain and you're climbing. And every little step, you're thinking to yourself, okay, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. And the people around me, they lack of people. They lack of people. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. But then at what point do you pull the plug? And in your situation, at the doctor's visit, the mental breakdown, and I can almost guarantee that once you went that, you're like, okay, cool. I've hit base camp. I'm going to take a little break. It's going to get better. 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 And I can imagine there's so many of our listeners out there that it's going to get better is 5 years, it's 8 years, it's 12 years. At what point do you actually say, it's not going to get better? It doesn't matter what I do in this organization, it's actually physically never going to get better.
That's a very, very interesting question. And I don't have an answer for you. The reason for that is because when you're in it...
Yeah, you don't know anything outside of it.
You're in it to win it, I think, as well.
Absolutely. So, you know, obviously, the point that I reached is when I was there and I physically just could not. I could not take it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, the manipulation, I was in a very, it was extremely manipulative, extremely political.
Yeah.
And the way that the people played it, that you could never trace it back to them.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever. So to give you an answer, when is the point? For me, that was after... I basically got put on medication to try and calm myself down.
Wow.
I was 11:30 at night running around my house
yeah.
that, you know, we were renting.
Yeah.
running around trying to get rid of this energy. It basically felt like I had, my car was like, you know, it's like when your car's not in gear, but your foot is down on the petrol. Yes. You're moving nowhere, but you are seriously putting your, you know, foot on the pedal. And I realized then I'm going to have to do something.
Yeah.
But because I'm extremely, you wouldn't say, it, you know, when you look at my Twitter account, but I'm quite risk averse.
Yeah.
I try and do, like, I like backup plans.
Yes.
So I spent a year creating backup plans.
Yeah.
And backup plans for backup plans for backup plans. And I want to encourage people, you know what, if you're not coping, get professional help.
Yeah.
Get the professional help that you need.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you do need medication, I know there's a lot of people that are like, oh my goodness, you know, like there's a stigma around it. But the fact is, if you can get a crutch just to help you for the next month, for the next 2-3 months, maybe for the next 6 months or a year, it is worth it.
But now on this toxic, like, so we're obviously talking around a lot on this toxic culture, toxic leadership, toxic business. From your experience, where does it start? Because do you actually just walk into a toxic company? Do you have a toxic boss? Do you have toxic coworkers? Where at this point do you see it happening? Because again, like you say, you started at the company and it was really great. Was it the fact that your experience, you just had a very toxic leadership team, or was it one person? Like, I'd be keen to understand that, because is it the fact that one bad apple ruins a lot, or is it that you just walk in and it's a bunch of bad apples and one good apple trying to fight the fight?
I have a question for you, for you guys.
Yes.
Do you guys play computer games?
I've played a couple, but not like religiously.
Yeah.
So in StarCraft 2, in the third expansion, Kerrigan says this one line, because Minsk says, I have turned you into the monster that you are. And she responded with, you have turned us all into monsters.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying with that is the following. I'm saying one person can turn everybody into monsters, or everybody can be monsters.
Yep.
It depends. It really depends. It can be a situation of both.
Yeah.
A great book that I would recommend that I've read is called Snakes in Suits.
Yeah.
When Psychopaths Go to Work. And it actually explains a lot about how they work, how it happens, and how it actually unfolds.
Yeah.
How to identify and how to, and it talks you a little bit about, you know, like dealing with it and how to avoid people in the company. But what I will say is that they also discuss, they say things like, what if it is a coworker? Because remember, if it is on a certain level, let's say it's a middle manager, then it could be a coworker if you're a middle manager.
Yeah.
But if you are a, you know, on the, if you're a ground staff member, it could be your boss.
Yeah.
It could also be a high-level person, which is higher up, that uses you as a pawn. So it really depends. It can be on any level that that person could be, but it could also be everybody in the company.
Mm.
And so there's not an easy answer for it. It could be a little bit of both.
Yeah, and I think that's why company culture, and I think especially the past couple of years, why that's been highlighted so much, because that's exactly what happens. If you look at company culture, it's probably a lame example, but if the three of us were sitting here and all of a sudden Simon starts swearing, all of a sudden Frugal starts swearing, all of a sudden Steve starts swearing, because it just rubs off then as norm, right? And that's why I think company culture has become so important today, because it's like, if it becomes the norm that the boss phones you at 6 o'clock and my coworker answers, I need to answer.
Absolutely.
You know, and then it just becomes this norm of a whole bunch of things which aren't good, and then you get this toxic environment. So that's why I think it is very difficult, as Frugal's saying, to identify who it is in the environment. And if you also come in and try to break it, that's even more difficult, you know, because it's like, how do I then, if everyone's answering at 6, how do I not answer at 6? You know, so it is a difficult one. But yeah, let's throw the question back at Simon and say, where do you think it would start?
Oh, that's a good one. I think there's multiple facets in terms of a company culture. I think for me, the big thing, actually not culture, but like the big thing on this toxicity, if we could call it that. But I think my view on it is it actually starts at the leadership level, because like you say, if you look at the structures of a company, if the ground level is toxic, or okay, no, let's reverse it. Like you said, the ground level is great and the manager's toxic, but the leader is great. So naturally, what should happen is the leader needs to eliminate the manager. Does it happen? No. Okay. So obviously, that's a much deeper conversation. But I think I was actually reading a really great thing, a post today. I'm probably going to fluff it up completely, but it was around that leaders should not be worried about followers. They should be worried about creating other leaders. And I think we need to have more people in society that are powerful leaders, that have great ideas and great passion for people. They need to be fostering relationships for the younger generation to come up with that. Because I think that the whole chain of this toxicity in a workplace, if you trace the steps back to everything, there's always a root cause to it. Unless you say like someone's a complete psychopath from the day they were born. But like you say, there's elements in each of us that are not necessarily on that extreme scale, but you've got to have some of those characteristics for the role that you play. Like for me in sales, I have to be charismatic with people. I need to get them on board, but it's not an extreme like character trait. So I think for me, there's always a root cause. I think if you look at a very toxic culture where there's an old leadership that drives that toxicity down, I can guarantee if you trace the steps back, when he started in a company, he got treated that way. Okay, let's be politically correct. He, she got treated that way. But for me, I always look at it, you can trace the steps back to a root cause where something happened in a business, that person thought it was the norm, and then it became the norm to treat people like crap, and then that person that gets treated like crap climbs the mountain, never gets off the mountain, because like you say, when I'm in that situation, I don't know anything better.
I think it's okay.
So I then think it's the norm that people can shout at me and swear at me. And then what happens is I just keep getting used to people screaming, shouting, swearing. Then what happens? Now I become 45, 50. I somehow land up into a senior director role. And then from there, you know, so I think for me, that's kind of the way that I view it, is there's always a root cause to it. And I think as an individual, where I would put myself is, am I going to change the root cause? No, never. If I'm working for someone that's 65 years old, that stuff is so entrenched in their character that I need to make the decision. Am I willing to keep climbing the mountain? Or am I actually going to say, you know what, screw this. I'm now going to go to Kilimanjaro, or I'm going to go to another place. And like you say, put the backup plans in place, but there's a massive but that I'm going to put in there. You need to look at the warning signs, because it's never a case that this thing just springs up on you on day one.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think, you know, what we can do is we can check some of the warning signs. There are a couple of small things that you can check, things like, you know, ask them, like, you know, what, like, for example, one of the things that that one of the managers said in my interview was, we've never missed a deadline.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a warning sign now.
Tell me more. How so?
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of things that I would definitely do different. Like, for example, when you're going for an interview and they say, okay, do I need to do overtime? Do I get paid for that? No.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you please, I need to specify in my contract what is realistic with overtime and what is not.
Yeah.
And then the next thing is, do you have standard operating procedures with regards to what is seen as validating overtime and what is not? So I think that definitely the overtime thing, you see, the thing is that nobody's going to lie on their deathbed and say, I wish I spent more time at the office.
Yeah.
No, that's 100% true.
So there's a couple of things that I do think, you know, you can look at. But the main thing you need to remember is that if you are working if you are planning on working somewhere, they are going to try and show you that they're amazing.
Yeah.
They're definitely not going to show you. If they do ask for references, though, I do think that you should ask for references back.
Yes.
Of ex-employees as well. And I'm just joking.
It is a good idea.
But I think it's actually shocking, you know, that they would ask for your references, but they're not willing to give you some of their ex-employees so that you can ask them about the environment as well. Yep. But I highly recommend that, you know, even people that have not been working in a toxic working environment, go and read that's Snakes in Suits. You need to understand what is out there.
Yep.
Because the big thing is we don't know.
Yeah,
you know, we think every day like all of our clients are very nice and they're perfect and everybody, and it's a normal thing. If you read Malcolm Gladwell's book called Talking to Strangers, he talks about defaulting to truth. Yeah. Like, for example, I'm having a beer here and I'm really hoping that you guys didn't put like something dodge in there. I'm trusting you guys. I'm defaulting to truth on that. In the same way, you know, when I threw in petrol, I like, you know, I tap my card, but I'm defaulting to truth that this guy's not going to clone my card.
Yeah.
But we default to truth and it's normal. We, you know, if we would default to false, we would freak out because we wouldn't trust anything, you know? It's like when you flush a toilet, you expect it to flush. You don't expect it to blow up in your face.
Unless you're at your chick's house and something happens and that awkward situation that you watch in the movies.
That would be very strange. Yeah. I know about a case, by the way, completely irrelevant, but I know about a case where there was actually a poisonous mamba, I think it was, black mamba or something, inside of the drains in a block of flats.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so like it's really cool, you know, you're sitting, you're like, oh my goodness, look what's going on down there. So, but that's irrelevant. Anyway, so, but I mean, we believe the best of everybody, don't we?
Yeah, that's 100% true. I think we're going to, unfortunately, have to end that episode there. We just want to say thanks so much to Just the Studios for having us. It's our first recording here with them, so we do appreciate that. And we're going to have Frugal on another episode where we're going to be discussing his journey. You know, obviously, he's chatted to us a lot and been quite open and honest about the toxic work environment. So we're going to chat to him about his entrepreneurship journey once he left there. Thanks so much for listening. And
yeah,
Frugal,
thanks so much. Before we end off, what handles can people follow you on, Frugal?
So my handles on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, all of them, is Frugal Local.
Okay.
So one word, you can find me there. My website is, you can go to frugallocal.co.za.
Yep.
I've recently changed it to localmoney.co.za.
Cool.